Gospel of John, we're picking up in verse 4 of our study. We'll just begin reading in verse 1. Spent quite a bit of time in these first three verses last Lord's Day morning because they're just filled with so much information for us. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him nothing was made that was made. In the beginning, that is, in the beginning of whenever that beginning was. Not the beginning of the creation of the world, but even before that. That's the beginning under consideration when only deity existed. So in the beginning was the Word. That is, the Word existed. The Word is identified for us later on in the context as Jesus Christ. So in the beginning was, that little verb, remember, simply has reference to existed. He existed in the beginning. And that Word was God. He was with God as well, the text says. That is, He maintained a relationship with God the Father. He was in the beginning with God. Verse 3, all things were made through Him. Now, Colossians 1 and verse 16 and 17. So, God, Genesis 1 and verse 1, in the beginning God, Elohim, plural, created the heavens and earth. So God the Father created the heavens and earth, but He did that through the agency of His Son. So God created the heavens and earth. That tells us that Jesus is deity, just in that fact that God created the heavens and earth, Genesis 1. And since God created the heavens and earth through the agency of His Son, then Jesus is deity. All things were made through Him. Remember, we spent a little bit of time on that idea of being made. That is, all things came into existence through Him. They weren't made or created in the sense that man creates. They came into existence through Him. And without Him, nothing was made that was made. Nothing came into existence that came into existence without Jesus Christ. In Him was life. In Him was life. We might note that life is not said to have been created by Him, though He did create life as He brought life into existence in His creation, in the power that He exerted. But note, life is not said here to be created by Him. Life is in Him. Only that which has life in it is able to produce life. So the only way Christ was able to produce life, create life, bring it into existence, was to have that life in Him to begin with. So in Him was life. That is, life existed. I want you to note that. In Him was life. There's that little Greek verb again. In Him was life. In Him life existed. That's how He could bring life into existence, because life existed in Him. And this is stated over and over again by John in his gospel account in John 5 and in verse 26. Let me read a couple of verses. John 5 and in verse 26, Jesus said, "For as the Father has life in Himself, so He has granted the Son to have life in Himself." So life is in Christ. That's where life exists. Both physical life and spiritual life exist in Him. Again, John 6 and in verse 57. John 6 and verse 57. Jesus again said, "As the living Father sent Me, and I live because of the Father, so he who feeds on Me will live because of Me." That is, have life because of Him. John 10, just one more. We could read several of these, but John 10 and verse 10. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. So both physical life and spiritual life is in Christ, in Him. As a matter of fact, John 20 and verse 31, remember, so that we'll believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing we may have life in Him or in His name. And so the purpose of John's writing is expressed there in John 20, verse 30 and 31. And part of that is that we might have life, and that life is found in Him. So in Him was life, and the life was the light of men. The Son has life in Himself, and now the Son, that is the Word, Jesus Christ, is said to be the life. The life was the light of men. John uses these figures of light and darkness quite a bit. We saw them in our study of the epistles of John, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. I often say that light is always associated with that which is right and good and righteous and upright. It's always associated with the realm of God. That is the realm in which God dwells, light. But darkness is always referred to as the realm of Satan, that is where sin dwells, where darkness and ignorance dwells. Here, in connection with Jesus being the light of men, verse 4, in Him was life, and the life was the light of men. He existed as the light of men. Here in the context, it is the image of revelation, because He is the illuminator. That's what He is. He is the illuminator of the minds of men. He illuminates them morally and spiritually. Darkness hides, darkness conceals. But when Jesus Christ came into the world, He came into the world as a light. He came into the world as an illuminator, one who would illuminate the minds of men. Sometimes I illustrate it like this. We've often seen a picture maybe in a magazine or a book, or someone is thinking and all of a sudden a light bulb appears at the top of their head. They're enlightened. They come to realize or perceive, comprehend what is being written about, perhaps that they're reading or perhaps what they're seeing. And so a light comes on. And so Jesus is that illuminator. He came into the world to illuminate the minds of men, to enlighten the minds of men. That is to reveal to them sin and God. Man really didn't know God, as we see from the Old Testament scriptures, but Jesus Christ came to declare Him. And we'll see that in the context, as a matter of fact. He came to declare God the Father. So He illuminates our mind in regard to our moral and spiritual being. He enlightens us. He tells us what sin is. He tells us what God expects of us. He reveals God and His will to us. And that's the thought expressed in this passage here. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. He was the illuminator of the minds of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. And the light shines in the darkness. You know what? The light shines in the darkness. If you walk into a dark room and you flip the light switch on, the light dispels the darkness. The light reveals. You go into perhaps your living room and turn the lamp on the table beside your couch or chair, you're able to see. It illuminates. It shows you things that you could not see in darkness. That is, it brings to your mind understanding, perception, comprehension. And that's what Jesus Christ does as light. He brings to the mind of men comprehension, understanding, perception. And so the light shines in the darkness. What is the darkness? Well, the darkness is in regard to Jesus being a light, a revelator, an illuminator. Darkness is that which conceals. It's that which hides. You know, people, if they want to engage in sin, that is not as much as today as in ages past, but they still do it. They hide under the cover of darkness to carry out evil. They hide under the cover of darkness to sin. There's more sin going on in the world during the night hours than there is the day hours. Why? Because people think that their sin cannot be seen. It's hidden by the darkness. And so the light shines in the darkness. The light shines. What does it do? It illuminates the darkness. It dispels the darkness. You hit the light switch and the darkness is gone. It flees. It runs and hides. Hides under the tables, hides under the chairs, but the darkness flees. And so the light under consideration is the Word. The light under consideration is Jesus Christ. And the light shines in the darkness. That is His revelation. His illuminating effect on the minds of men shines in the darkness of sin, shines in this dark world of sin. And the darkness did not comprehend it. Now, some versions will say the darkness did not overcome it. As a matter of fact, I've got in a column reference here in my New King James Version, it has, instead of comprehend, it has or overcome. Overcome. And what we see in this word is we see it can be rendered both ways, because it is rendered both ways in the New Testament. Comprehend, understand, perceive. Sometimes it's rendered overcome. The word itself means to seize, to grasp, to lay hold of, thus to overcome or gain control of. Look with me in John 12, if you will, John 12 in verse 35, and we see it used that way in the sense of overcome. John 12 and verse 35, Jesus said to them, "A little while longer the light is with you. Walk while you have the light," we're coming to our word now, "lest darkness overtake you, grasp hold of you, lay hold of you, seize you, overthrow you, overcome you. He who walks in darkness does not know where he is going." So we see the word can be understood and taken as overcome or overtake or lay hold of. And so here in John 1 and in verse 5, the light shines in darkness and the darkness did not comprehend it. Well, why is it that sometimes some versions, for example, English Standard Version renders it overcome in this passage, as well as Christian Standard Bible renders it overcome. But the New King James Version renders it comprehend, as well as I believe the King James Version does, if I remember correctly. And the New American Standard Bible renders it by the word understood. The darkness did not understand it. Young's literal translation renders the word perceive. Perceive. So the idea in the Greek word is to grasp or lay hold of. But perhaps it's used metaphorically here to grasp or lay hold of with the mind. So put that into the context. I believe that's what's under consideration. In the immediate context, the light shines in the darkness. Remember what light does? Light illuminates. Light reveals. Light makes known. Light brings about understanding. So the light shines in darkness, and the darkness did not perceive it, understand it, comprehend it. That is, the people who were in darkness did not know who Jesus was. They didn't recognize Him as deity in the flesh. We see that later in the context. In the context in verse 10. Jump all the way down to verse 10. We'll read verse 9 in connection with it. "That was the true light, which gives light to every man coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him." That is, the people of the world did not know him. They didn't comprehend the light. They didn't understand and perceive the true light, Jesus Christ. And so that's perhaps the way the word is used, and that's why it's translated, King James, New King James, comprehend, understand, New American Standard Bible, perceive, Young's literal translation, instead of overthrow. But it can be translated overcome or overthrow. So the darkness did not overthrow. It did not overpower. It did not seize and grasp the light. The light is always victorious over darkness. We see it in the physical light. Hit the light switch and the darkness is dispelled. So it can be one or the other. I take the position that it's perhaps better understood in the context of this as comprehend or understand. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. It did not understand it. It did not understand the light. It did not understand Jesus Christ. There was no perception, no comprehension of who Jesus was, nor that which he was teaching. It simply went over the heads of many during the time that he was upon earth, as his revelation continues to go over the heads of many today, and they simply do not spend enough time in it to understand it. In connection with that, verse 6, still in the same subject, though John the Baptizer comes on the scene. Verse 6, there was a man sent from God whose name was John. There was a man sent from God. That word translated sent here is a verb form of the word from which we get our word apostle, apostolos. So there was a man sent from God. Note he was sent from God. That is, God sent him. God sent John the Baptizer. We could take time to go back in the Old Testament, look at where prophecy was made concerning John coming. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. It's John the Baptizer under consideration. We'll see later on in the context more clearly in that as well. Verse 7, this man came for a witness to bear witness of the light. This man, that is John, came for a witness to bear witness of the light. That is to present testimony regarding the light. Regarding who Jesus is. So John comes as a witness. He is going to witness and give testimony in regard to who the light, who the Word, who Jesus Christ really is. Well, who is he? Well, he's deity. He's God in the flesh. So this man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that, or so that, or in order that, or all through him might believe. Now, the word here, believe, we have to understand to believe and obey. That, or so that, all through him, all through John, might believe and respond in regard to that belief. Because it wasn't enough, and we'll see that in the context later on. It's not enough just to believe. Believing in and of itself does not make one a child of God. We'll see that later on in verse 12. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in him. They're not children of God, but he gave the right or power to those who believe to become children of God. So belief in itself doesn't make one a child of God. So we have to understand that the word belief in verse 7 has reference to obedient belief. So John came as a witness. He came as one who was going to testify to the fact that Jesus is the light. He is the Word. He is the Son of God. He is deity come among men. So this man came for a witness to bear witness of the light, that so that in order that all through him might believe. He was not that light. No, John the Baptizer was not that light. Later on we're going to see that he's questioned by those who are sent perhaps from the Sanhedrin Council or the Jewish authorities at the temple in Jerusalem, questioning John in regard to who he is. Because some think, well, he may be the Christ. He may be the prophet. But John says he was not that. He was not that light. John was not the illuminator. He was not the one who was going to reveal God to the minds of man. He was simply one who was going to bear witness and present testimony in regard to who the light was. He was not that light, verse 8, but was sent to bear witness of that light. Same thing mentioned in verse 7. Verse 9. That was the true light, which gives light to every man coming into the world. The true light, the genuine light, the real light. So there are some lights that are not the true light, that are not the real light, that are not the genuine light. Jesus refers to his children as, or his people as, you are the light of the world. So we're lights. John is referred to later on, we'll see in his gospel, about being a light, like a torch or a lamp. But he is not the true light. He's not the genuine light. Jesus is the genuine light. He is the true light. He's the true illuminator. You know, you ever seen the moon just big and glowing and shining bright on a really dark night? Where does it get its light? Well, the moon doesn't give off its own light. It's simply reflecting the light of the sun. So that's what we, as I guess you might say, small illuminators do. We simply reflect the light of the sun. We are the light of the world. Well, Jesus says he is the light of the world. Well, which one is the light of the world? Well, we're both the lights of the world. But he is the genuine light. He is the true light. And that's the emphasis in that little word, true, or genuine there. That was the true light which gives light to every man. He gives light to every man. He illuminates the minds of every man. If you'll let that light in, it'll reveal things to you that you've never known before. But you've got to let the light in. You've got to kind of open the door and let the light shine in. Open your heart and let the light shine in. That was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world. Every man born into the world has the opportunity to receive the light, to receive the revelation, to receive the illumination of the mind by Jesus Christ through his word. Verse 10, he was in the world and the world was made through him and the world did not know him. He was in the world, cosmos, world. The word cosmos is used three times in the verse, but it's used in two different ways here. He was in the world as we know it. That is the created world as we can look and see around us. So he was in the world. That is, the light was in the world. This illuminator of the minds of men was in the world. And the world was made through him. Goes back in the context, we see that who's under consideration by that phrase. The Word brought the world into existence. So the world was made through him, the creation, the world itself, as we see it and as we know it. So he was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world, cosmos again, did not know him. The people of the world. The last word translated world there, although the same word, it has reference to the people of the world did not know him. The world did not know him does not mean that the rocks and hills and the trees did not know him, or the moon and the skies and so forth didn't know him, but the people of the world did not know him. They had no knowledge of him. They had no understanding of him. Their perception was darkened. They were in ignorance in regard to who the light was. And so man is still in ignorance today in regard to who the light was. As I mentioned earlier, John later on is going to be questioned in regard to who he is. And I presented a lesson on that not long ago. If you remember in that lesson, we come to learn that people did not know that Jesus was, in fact, the Christ, the Messiah, and the prophet, who was going to be like Moses who was to come. They thought these people were different ones. And so they did not know him. They had no perception and understanding and true knowledge of who he was. And so they did not receive him. They thought he was just another man, just another man among men, but he was more. All of this builds from the opening remarks of this book all the way to the end, that Jesus is deity, the Son of God. And that's why John the Baptizer was a witness, to present testimony, to cause people to believe that very thing. But John the Baptizer was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true or genuine light, which gives light to every man, illuminates the hearts and minds of every man coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world, the people of the world, simply did not know him. Verse 11, John 1. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. Now we have to try to figure out in our own minds what his own is. Same word used twice, but perhaps has reference to different things. And depending on which lexicographer you look at, that is those who write our dictionaries and encyclopedias of the Greek words, they define it in different ways. And so he came to his own. The first own could refer to his own creation because he created all things. Verse 10 in the previous verse. So is that what's under consideration? Maybe. Came to his own creation. Could in fact be his own things. That's what's mentioned in the margin of my Bible, his own things in the New King James Version. Or his own domain. So he came to his own. Could be he came to his own land. His own land, because he was a Jew. He came to his own land. It would indeed be his own land because he created it. He brought it into existence. So there's many different things that could be put there for when he came to his own. And then the second, verse 11, and his own did not receive him. Well, we know his own here can't be the land, and we know the own here can't be the creation that he brought into existence. We know the own here can't be his own things. He didn't come to his own things, that is, those things he brought into existence. It's people under consideration. His own people did not receive him. As we noted in verse 10, he was in the world and the world was made through him, and the world, that is the people of the world, did not know him. The people of the world in general did not know who he was. But he came to his own people, that is the people of his own nation, the Jewish people. And they did not receive him. They did not accept him for who he really was. He was the Messiah, the Christ, the Son of God, the prophet who was to come. But they did not receive him. They did not accept him. They did not surrender themselves to him in submission to the Son of God. So he came to his own, perhaps, his own land or his own creation. Came to the land of Israel. And his own people in the land of Israel, the Jewish people, did not receive him. And we'll see that throughout this study of this gospel as well. That the Jewish people simply did not receive him. Now, some of the Jews did receive him, but for the most part, the nation itself rejected him as their Messiah, as the Christ who was to come. But note the next verse. It begins with that little word, but, shows a contrast. So he came to his own creation, or to his own land, and his own people did not receive him. But, here's the contrast, as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God. As many as received him, as many as accepted him as the Christ, the Son of God, as many as accepted him as the Christ, the Son of God, as many as accepted him as the light, the illuminator of mankind, the one in whom life exists, to them he gave the right. And this word right here is the same word we find in other places translated authority. Matthew 28 and verse 18, all authority has been given to me in heaven and earth. Same word. Means the right, the ability, authority. So he gives those who receive, those who accept Jesus Christ as the Son of God, he gives them the right, he gives them the authority to then become children of God. They're not children of God through just simply receiving him. You know, the denominational world has this big idea, well, receive Christ into your heart and you'll be saved. No, you're going to have to do more than receive him. You're going to have to move on from an acceptance of him as the Son of God to obedience to him as the Son of God. So just because one receives him does not mean that he is saved. And we see that clearly in this verse. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right, he gave the power, he gave the right or the authority to become children of God. They were not children of God, but when they accept him as the light, as the giver of life, as the one in whom life exists, when they accept him as deity, the Christ, the Son of God, he gives them the right then to become children of God. Note this, to those who believe in his name. The word name here is used by metonymy. It has reference to his person. To those who believe in him is the idea. You believe in him, but belief in him is an obedient belief. So you have the right to become children of God to those who believe in him, to those who believe in his name, to those who believe in his person, to those who believe that he is the Christ, the Son of God, the illuminator of the minds of men, both morally and spiritually, the giver of life, the one in whom life exists. He gives you the right to become a child of God through an obedient belief. Questions or comments? Verse 13, in connection with that, who, and this refers back to those who have the right to become children of God and those who believe in him, who were born, so these are born, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God, who were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. You have three things there. Not of blood, not of the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. All of it simply says that becoming a child of God is not a physical process that comes through the process of being born physically into the family of God. You know, in the Old Testament, one was a child of God simply because they were born into the family of God. That is, into the nation of Israel. Everyone who was a physical descendant in that nation, every child who was born was automatically a child of God. And because the nation of Israel was God's people. And they came into that relationship as a child of God through a physical process. But John tells us here that this process is not a physical process. It's a spiritual process. It's not of man. It is of God. Note that at the end of verse 13. Who were born not of blood. Blood has reference to man. Nor of the will of the flesh. The fleshly part of man. The desire of man. Nor of the will of man, but of God. So one, becoming a child of God is not brought about through physical descent, but it's brought about by a spiritual operation of God. We're born of God. We become children of God through a spiritual process. And that spiritual process involves us accepting Jesus Christ as the Son of God, believing that if we submit to His will in obedience, He will save us. Thus we become children of God through that process. Questions or comments? Verse 14. John 1, verse 14. Now we come to the part of the text that identifies for us who actually the Word was that was mentioned at the beginning. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And the Word became flesh. I want you to note that. He became flesh. He wasn't flesh to begin with, but He became flesh. He took upon Himself flesh. This is another one of those passages that show that the Word, Jesus Christ, is deity because He became flesh. He wasn't flesh. He had to become flesh. He was spirit. Before a child is brought into this world, he is not flesh. He is spirit. God creates a spirit. How that process takes place, we have no way of knowing. We simply do not know how it is that God creates the spirit of man, brings the spirit of man into existence. And through the creative process of man and woman, that spirit takes upon itself flesh. Jesus Christ existed as spirit, and He became flesh. He took upon Himself flesh. He wasn't flesh to begin with. He had to become flesh. And the Word became flesh. And note this. Here's an important word here. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That word dwelt means to pitch a tent. To tabernacle. Shows a couple of things. First of all, it shows that flesh of man is not permanent because Jesus was deity, He was spirit, but He became flesh, and that flesh was like a tent. It's not a permanent dwelling, just like our body is referred to as a tent or tabernacle. Our body is not permanent, it's temporary. And so He dwelt among us, He tabernacled among us. He pitched His tent among us in the flesh. So Jesus Christ took upon Himself human flesh. He tabernacled or pitched His tent among us. He lived among man. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory. Note that. We beheld His glory as the glory as of the only begotten of the Father. Who is the we beheld His glory? Well, I take the we here to be not only John and the other apostles, but all who during this particular period of time would have seen God manifested in the flesh. Remember, in the writing of this gospel account, John is going to present 7 miracles. And each one of the miracles that he presents is for the purpose of causing people to believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. When people saw those miracles, when Jesus saw Jesus performing those miracles, they saw the glory of God being exhibited in His life. Sometimes we think the word glory only means brightness, that which is shining, that which is glowing. But many times the word glory has reference to dignity, majesty, deity in the Scriptures. And that's the way it's used here. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory. The first thing that comes to many people's minds is John says, we beheld his glory. Remember, John was one of those who was on the Mount of Transfiguration, and the appearance of Jesus was changed, and of course his glory showed on that occasion. That is the brightness of his glory. But that's not all that's under consideration here. Jesus told Mary, or Martha, at the tomb of Lazarus, stand here and you'll see the glory of God. When Jesus said, Lazarus, come forth, and Lazarus came forth out of that tomb, she saw on that occasion the glory of God, the dignity and the majesty. She saw the deity of God exhibited in that miracle of bringing Lazarus forth from the grave. And that's what's under consideration. We could look at several places in the New Testament show that's how glory is used. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. We're out of time. We'll have to stop there and pick up with that thought. As of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and full of truth. So make a note of that. We'll pick up here next Lord's Day morning. Thank you very much for your kind attention this morning.